Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's Fourth Branch podcast series. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. Hello, this is Nate Kaczmarek, Director of the Regulatory Transparency Project, and I'm pleased to have Wen Fa joining us for RTP's Explainer podcast. Wen, how are you today?
Doing well.
It's great to have you with us. I should note for our audience that Wen is an attorney at PLF, the Pacific Legal Foundation. He's litigated numerous cases dealing with private property, equality under the law, school choice, economic liberty, and the First Amendment. He holds a bachelor's degree from the University of Texas at Dallas, a master's in political theory from the London School of Economics, and his law degree is from the University of Michigan Law School. With that, it's good to be here. And Wen is here to talk about recent First Amendment litigation in California in a case called Kotler v. Webb. Wen, why don't you start us off by telling us about the case and what led you and PLF to get involved?
Yeah, so John Kotler is a professor at the University of Southern California. He's a First Amendment expert. He's actually argued a case before the Supreme Court. He's also a diehard fan of the soccer team, London-based soccer team, Fulham. And Fulham wears white jerseys, so their official cheer is, "Come on, you whites." So in 2017, after 2017-18, after a historic run by the soccer team, John Kotler applied for a personalized license plate with the acronym COYW. That's a commonly used acronym, but the DMV, California DMV, denied him that license plate because they said California regulation requires them to deny license plate applications that are, quote, offensive to good taste and decency, and they said it was offensive that he wanted to support his soccer team. Now, he sent them all this material saying that "Come on, you whites" is a normal, regularly used acronym to support the soccer team. He sent them things like NBC news reports, team website documents, even things from the team's Twitter account, but they would not be budged. They thought it was offensive. They thought it was had racial connotations. And, you know, it's just one example of what the government can do with an overbroad regulation like this one. Everybody, first of all, not everybody knows what COYW means, and everybody who does know what it means knows it's not offensive.
So let me back up a second and ask, what did was he required in applying for this license plate to give an explanation at the outset to the DMV?
Yes, he was. So every applicant who applies for a license plate has to supply the department with the meaning, but the department apparently has about four officials, bureaucrats, who hold weekly meetings every week and discuss proposed license plates for an hour. And ostensibly, they use sources like Urban Dictionary and Google Images in making their own determination about whether or not a license plate is offensive.
And you mentioned that these officials are interpreting a regulation. Is this a new regulation, or is this one that's been on the books for a while?
No, this regulation has been on the books for a while. I think California has had this regulation on license plates for quite a few decades now. And but each year they get about 250,000 applications every year. And not surprisingly, this overbroad regulation on offensive license plate leads to a lot of arbitrary results.
And in terms of that, is it your sense that over time there's been more and more rejections based on regulators determining that, a given license plate application is offensive, or do you think it's been consistent all the way through, or do you have information in that regard?
I don't know how, you know, any given year compares to years in the past, but I know there was an expose done in April with a bunch of different license plates that the DMV has rejected. One wine connoisseur, California is the state of Napa Valley after all, wanted a license plate that said Zen Red for, you know, Red Zinfandel. And California has interprets the regulation to prevent people from even naming a color like red or blue because it could be viewed as affiliation with a gang. I mean, just because someone likes wine doesn't mean a person's a member of the gang. And I think this is just one of many, many examples of bureaucrats applying a vague and broad regulation in an arbitrary way.
Okay. In instances where government officials do reject these license plates, is there an appeal process? What did Mr. Kotler do after the initial rejection?
Yes, there is an appeals process, and Mr. Kotler submitted a letter. He drafted a letter explaining the origins of the COYW acronym, and he attached to that letter about 15 pages of articles, news reports, tweets, and things of that sort, evidence that this has no racial connotation whatsoever. It's not offensive whatsoever. It's just a slogan routinely used to support the Fulham soccer team, the same soccer team that he's a season ticket holder of, that he goes to watch every single, he travels to England to watch every single year. And then despite all that, the department sent him a one-paragraph letter saying that they're basically remaining with their original determination that the proposed license plate is unacceptable.
And thereafter, I assume he reached out and contacted you all? Is that how you got involved in the case?
Well, he is a First Amendment expert, so he knew that this raised extreme First Amendment concerns, and that's how we got in touch with him. After all, he just wants to support his soccer team, and I think as the Supreme Court of the United States has indicated in recent cases dealing with trademarks, in cases like Tam and Brunetti, a ban on speech that the government deems offensive is arbitrary, and it's unconstitutional viewpoint discrimination.
Understood. So what happened next? Did you, in terms of the filing of the case and the litigation that has occurred since?
So we filed our lawsuit in April, and it was actually picked up not just nationally by outlets like the LA Times, but also internationally by outlets like BBC News. And they were saying how absurd it was for the DMV to deny Mr. Kotler of this license plate. The government actually came back and argued that this was somehow government speech, that personalized license plate configurations, even though they are supplied solely by the individual, and even though they contain configurations like I am Bob, love my pet, or in this case, COYW, they argued that it was somehow government speech. But fortunately, last Thursday, I argued this case before the trial court, and the trial court rejected the government's contention.
Changing gears just a little bit, I'm curious, do you have an understanding or a handle on how other states approve their personalized license plates?
Well, you know, this is a nationwide issue. Many other states have similar processes, or they have similar statute, I should say. I don't know about their particular processes. This is something that's been challenged in Indiana, in Maryland, and there's an ongoing litigation in Kentucky brought by the ACLU about this issue. So it's a nationwide problem that affects literally millions of Americans.
So you indicated that you argued on Thursday against a motion to dismiss. Is that right?
That's right.
And what are the next steps in the case?
So the next step, the court allowed our litigation to go forward. So the next step is we're waiting for an answer from the department. I think at this point, we may ask the court for judgment because as the Supreme Court indicated in the recent trademark cases, you can't ban speech just because you view it as offensive. There's room for offensive speech under the First Amendment, and people have the First Amendment right to say all sorts of things, including things that are both inoffensive and things that are offensive.
Without getting too graphic, do you have examples of things you think the Supreme Court would uphold as offensive or a state like California could, in fact, reject?
So in the Brunetti case, a recent Supreme Court decision, the Supreme Court indicated that it might uphold statutes that were drafted narrowly, for example, statutes spanning obscenities or vulgarities or profanities. But that's simply miles away from a statute that bans something that's merely offensive. Different things are offensive to different people, and a broad statute like one that bans offensiveness just gives the government way too much leeway to arbitrarily ban any speech they don't like, and it gives them leeway to discriminate on the basis of viewpoint.
Why is this case important to you and to PLF?
Well, this case is important because it deals with an individual's right to express themselves, even though the government might find it offensive. The proper response, this is a big issue today, that people are thinking about ways to respond to offensive speech. And there are, you know, even people that sadly view violence as a response to offensive speech. And that's simply unacceptable. We must persuade by reason, not by force. And the way to respond to speech that we find offensive is to provide with our own countervailing opinions and to debate those ideas out in the marketplace of ideas. That's what the First Amendment is all about. And the government shouldn't be stepping in to ban speech just because it finds it offensive.
Some people, audience members, might find the topic a little unusual for RTP. I wonder if you could, in your mind, tie, you know, what is the nexus between what RTP is focused on and issues at stake in this case?
Definitely. So this regulation, like many broad regulations, are enforced by a bunch of low-level bureaucrats that are enforced arbitrarily. They're enforced inconsistently. One case that PLF litigated, for example, deals with a similar issue about polling place apparel in Minnesota. And that apparel was struck down by the Supreme Court as a violation of the First Amendment. It banned people from wearing political apparel, similar to this ban on offensive speech and how broad it is. And I think the potential for abuse really was highlighted at oral argument in that case when Justice Alito asked the government's attorney whether he could ban someone from wearing a T-shirt featuring the text of the Second Amendment. And the government's attorney said no. Justice Alito said, what about the First Amendment? The government's attorney said yes. So I think similarly, you know, this raises the same risks of arbitrary decision-making and the same risks of viewpoint decision-making. And I think that's something that every American on the left and the right should be worried about, that the government would basically censor speech just because it disagrees with the viewpoint.
Well, Wen, I think this has been very helpful in understanding where this case is at in California. We appreciate you coming into the studio and talking with our audience today. Is there any final thoughts or reflections you'd like to leave with our audience?
Yeah, so Pacific Legal Foundation is representing Mr. Kotler, as we represent all of our clients, free of charge, and we're doing it to vindicate the First Amendment rights of all Americans. The government can't ban speech just because it deems it offensive. There have been a lot of speech in our nation's history that have been offensive at one point or another, and today they're widely accepted as laudatory, and the government has no business censoring speech just because it thinks it's offensive.
Well, thank you very much, Wen. We really appreciate it. We hope to have you again on the program soon.
Thanks for having me on.
Federal Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to the Fourth Branch Podcast. To catch every new episode when it's released, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spreaker. For the latest from RTP, please visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org.
This has been a FedSoc Audio Production.